You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Adam Schefter is reporting that owners are conducting a league meeting as we speak. And who better to go to than Adam, who joins us right now. And joining us now is Adam Schefter, the man who tweeted that information. And Schefty, what more can you tell us about the call that is taking place as you and I speak right now?
Phil, there are so many issues to sort out between the NFL and owners as they try to get training camps open on time. There are the health and safety protocols that need to be in place. There are the financial arrangements that need to be finalized. They need to decide whether to reduce or eliminate the preseason. They need to figure out the opt-out language and the opt-out rules for players who don't feel safe in this current environment and don't want to put themselves, their families, or their friends at risk for the upcoming season. So there are a whole host of issues that the NFL and the owners have to sign off on before they could put into place a plan with the NFL Players Association. Now, the two sides are making progress, and I do think that they will get this figured out here in a short period of time, but they must first talk amongst themselves, and that's exactly what's going on. Similar to the conversations that basketball had to have amongst itself and baseball had to have amongst itself and hockey had to have amongst itself, those conversations are now occurring as we're doing this hit with the NFL owners and the National Football League.
All right, Schefty, the man with all the information, we thank you very much for the latest on the call taking place, as you said, right now.
Thank you, Field.
Let's review how we got to this point. It was a busy weekend. On Friday, the NFLPA asked for a conference call with physicians from teams in hotspot markets and requested the league eliminate all preseason games. Then on Saturday, the NFL sent out a memo reiterating that all players are due to report to training camp on July 28th. Dozens of players took to Twitter yesterday to voice their concerns about the safety protocols put in place, or lack thereof, including some of the top quarterbacks in the game. Said Russell Wilson, "I am concerned. My wife is pregnant. NFL training camp is about to start, and there's still no clear plan on player health and family safety." And there he is with a shrug emoji. Hashtag, we want to play football, but we also want to protect our loved ones. Hashtag, we want to play. Drew Brees added, "We need football. We need sports. We need hope. The NFL's unwillingness to follow the recommendations of their own medical experts will prevent that. If the NFL doesn't do their part to keep players healthy, there is no football in 2020. It's that simple. Get it done, NFL." And here's Patrick Mahomes getting ready to report this week, hoping the NFL will come to an agreement with the safe and right protocols so we can feel protected playing the sport we love. Hashtag, we want to play. Here's Bucs linebacker and NFLPA executive committee member Sam Acho earlier today on Get Up. Oh, check that. We're going to go more information. New on NFL Live. Mahomes head coach Andy Reid, as reported through Twitter by Adam Teicher, says it sounds like the Chiefs aren't planning to be on the field for practice anytime soon. Andy Reid indicated there will be a period of conditioning that might last for 10 days before any real on-field work begins. Here's more reaction with the aforementioned Sam Acho earlier today on Get Up.
We really do want to play. We've been negotiating for months with owners about trying to find a safe and healthy return to work protocol. We've hired experts jointly hired by the NFLPA and the NFL, and those experts have made recommendations and the NFL has refused to follow them. The NFL, as an employer, has a responsibility to create a safe and healthy workplace for their employees, the players. If those employees are not in a safe and healthy workplace and they don't have to show up to work, simple as that. Typically, we need something called an EIDR plan. That's an infectious disease emergency response plan. If some type of outbreak were to occur, we need to know what are the right steps and protocols in order to keep players safe and healthy. Right now, only one team has that in place. That's the Kansas City Chiefs. So we need that from every single team. I think the NFL knows what's at stake, and I think they know they have to get something done.
Are now going to be joined by our crew, and let's begin with Diana Rossini. You talked to players who were tweeting all day yesterday about this. What was their biggest concern?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of action on social media, but I haven't seen this in a long time where every player seemed to be weighing in on this with the same message. And talking to some of them offline, or at least not on Twitter, and just through text message and over the phone, it just seems like they want to make it clear that there's just two things that they're focused on right now, which is they want fans to know we want to play, and they want the league to know they want to play and be able to feel like they are safe. Players are really looking to get that daily COVID testing. And more importantly, in terms of their football fitness and getting ready for that, they want to eliminate all preseason games. That's something right now that the league is looking to at least have one or two. But that is all still being discussed as we speak at that owners' meeting with the league. There's numerous things that they are going over. But for the players, it's really all about safety, not just for themselves, but for their families when they leave practice. As we know today, though, the Houston Texan rookies and the Kansas City Chief rookies, they were there at the facilities today. They were just getting COVID tested. They pulled up, took their test, and they drove home, as we heard from Andy Reid just a few minutes ago, saying that it's going to be a while before we see some actual football on the ground.
All right, you see some of the key days that are coming up. Again, today, as one rookies for, as Diana just mentioned, the Chiefs and the Texans are in just briefly. And then 1 week from today, from tomorrow, excuse me, players are required to report to training camp. Damian, let's go back to you. As a former player yourself, how would you characterize what you've seen from players, what you've read from players on Twitter, and maybe heard in their reactions to the lead up to training camp?
Well, to echo what Diana initially said, first and foremost, the players want to play, but they want to play in a safe and healthy environment. I mean, listen, this is not like the NBA bubble. You're going to have guys, you know, 1,700 guys, whatever the number is, that are still going to be at home, still going to be out in the public. Their kids going to be in school. And so there's always going to be that exposure to the virus. And so the players want to know, listen, we need to get tested every day, because again, we're not going to be bubble wrapped like, you know, the other leagues that are out here. We need to make sure we're tested every day, and we need to make sure that our environment is as safe as possible, so we won't get it, so we won't expose our loved ones in this whole situation.
All right, Rob, let's play a game of fill in the blank. The NFL's communication to players has been what of late?
Poor. I mean, it's unacceptable that the National Football League has had months to figure out what they're going to do as far as protocols going up into training camp. This isn't like the NBA where the virus came up during the season. They've had months here to prepare for this deadline of reporting to camp and have something figured out for the players to understand, okay, this is what I can expect. I feel safe. I feel confident that I can go into work every day and do my job without having to worry or have anxiety about potentially bringing a virus home to my loved ones. So I can understand where players, you know, they're upset. They don't understand why there isn't a little bit more concrete, I guess, rules and regulations on what's going to happen when you report to camp. But it's poor. It's poor communication, and it should have been figured out by now. This is the NFL. The NFL, right? It's a little bit unprofessional, if you ask me, for professional teams to have to deal with this.
Yeah, Rob, I think from the players' perspectives, too, right now, they're frustrated that there is no certain plan in place, or at least it's not concrete at this point. I feel like this has been in flux for a long time. When this all started, felt like the NFL had time on its side, really, and it's really lost out on that. But that being said, players feel like this is going to get sorted out. That's the good news. It's just when. There's not a lot of days left here. And, you know, Rob, a lot of people also ask, what about the bubble concept, right? We've been seeing it with the NBA. We'll see how that works out. And from what I can gather, that was taken off the table immediately. That wasn't even something that they really wanted to try. There's just too many teams, too many cities, too many people involved. I know in one NFL PA meeting, I thought it was really interesting that a representative brought up, take a look at Australia, what they've done with rugby. I think rugby's probably the best comparison in terms of sports that's closest to the game of football. And they're using bubbles. And they've been playing competitively for almost 8 weeks now. They're up and running. So there's certainly some frustrations with how we got here. But there is also some confidence that this will get done and it'll get sorted out.
Well, Diana, hopefully there is that confidence that remains. Feels like there's a lot of public animosity as well. But there was some stuff that was agreed to. The NFL and Players Union did unveil travel guidelines for this season. Amongst the new regulations are a mandate that team buses cannot be more than 50% full, and there needs to be at least one open seat between passengers on team planes. There will be individual hotel rooms and required face coverings for all players and team personnel while on the road. And players are being told that they will not be allowed to leave their hotel room to eat in restaurants that are open to the public.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Back on NFL Live and recapping the Washington Post story that broke last Thursday, here are some of the key takeaways. 15 women who worked for the Washington football team have alleged sexual harassment and verbal abuse. Two front office members, Alex Santos and Richard Mann, along with longtime radio voice Larry Michael, have been accused of harassment. There have been no specific allegations against owner Daniel Snyder. The team has hired a D.C. attorney to review their culture and the allegations of workplace misconduct. Snyder sent this letter to all team employees Friday night and saying, in part, on behalf of the organization, we want to apologize to each of you and to everyone affected by this situation. The actions in the story have no place in our franchise or in society. As you may be aware, when the past issues outlined in the article were initially brought to our attention, they were addressed at the time. However, some of these issues were brought forth only in the last few days, and we have subsequently made changes and addressed them as well. Clearly, there's work to be done to build a better organizational culture. We need to get better, and the time is now. As the team was confronted with the women's allegations, two senior executives of the team were fired and another retired. Of the women alleging mistreatment while employed by the Washington football team, only one, former marketing coordinator Emily Applegate, has identified herself publicly. Saturday on SportsCenter, she spoke with Jeremy Schapp.
Emily, 15 women came forward and spoke to the Washington Post for this story. You among them, obviously. You were the only one who was named. The other 14, some of them have non-disclosure agreements. Some were fearful of litigation. Why did you come forward to speak to the Post, and why did you agree to have your name used?
For me, I don't work in sports anymore. I don't have the intention of ever doing that again. So I can understand a lot of my former coworkers that are still in the industry, you know, that they don't want to come forward or it's just not a right time for them. But for me, it was a really easy decision. I want to be able to make some kind of change, and I can't do that unless I just put it all out there.
Emily, in that Washington Post story, you talked about being verbally abused by your boss, Mitch Gershman. What do you think Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen, the former team president, knew about the way you were being treated?
Well, I can't speak too much of Dan Snyder because I only could count on maybe one hand of the times that I actually saw him. I sat right outside of Bruce Allen's office. I did a few things for him, and I know for a fact that he had to have heard what was going on. So to not say anything as the most powerful person in that building is kind of a letdown, but I can't believe for a second that, you know, they didn't know exactly what was going on. You see somebody outside your office crying at her desk, or even a time leaving his office crying because I was belittled in front of a group of executives. So, you know, he definitely knew something was happening.
As we said, Emily, it's 15 women who worked for the team who spoke to the Post. It's also a few women who were reporters who talked about being harassed. So what responsibility do you think the owner, Dan Snyder, has for the culture that is described in that story?
I mean, I think it starts from the top and it trickles down. So these are people that he hired. These are people that he let run his organization. So if, you know, you're allowing this kind of behavior to happen, it's not a good look for you. And I saw an apology that went out to the current employees of the team. It seems a little misdirected. I think there's at least 15 women that deserve an apology of some sort. And I'm sure there's countless others that didn't get a chance to tell their stories.
Emily, that letter from Dan Snyder, signed by Dan Snyder and his wife Tanya to team employees saying they're sad and disappointed, wanting to apologize to each of you. There was that letter. There was also the statement from Dan Snyder saying they were hiring a law firm to look into the accusations in the Post story. What's your reaction to that decision and also to the NFL saying that it would wait to take any action against the team until that investigation is completed?
I mean, I hope that they move forward with it. I feel sometimes even with players that get in trouble and there's a investigation, it doesn't necessarily go too far. I know a lot of us always kind of just assume that's the way to brush it under the rug. I hope that they do an investigation. I hope that people that are still working in that building that are behaving like that or allowing that behavior to continue around them no longer have a job to go to, because they're not changing. They haven't changed. They saw the way that this happened. So if it only took this for that kind of behavior to be corrected, that's not okay either.
Emily, in that story, you describe your experience working for Washington as the most miserable of your life. What made it so miserable? Why was it such a horrible experience?
Yeah, I mean, anytime that anybody is belittling you in any way, especially making comments about your intelligence level, you're embarrassed, it's shameful, and it's happening on a daily basis. So imagine just being called stupid on a daily basis and then also almost in the same breath being hit on for your appearance. It's a miserable work experience. It was a dreadful drive to work and mostly a teary-eyed drive home from work. The amount of heat that you would take in this position was just unbearable.
Emily Applegate, former Washington football team employee who came forward this week to speak to the Washington Post about abusive behavior she experienced there. Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
We welcome in now Washington team reporter John Keim, and we'll start with you, John. What can you tell us about the reaction from those in the organization since that Washington Post story broke?
Well, I can tell you, Phil, that the reaction from head coach Ron Rivera is to be very forward-looking. He wasn't a part of the past when a lot of these allegations were going on or these things were going on. So he was resolute to me on two things. One, he's in it for the long haul. And two, he's going to make sure that this stuff doesn't continue under his watch. And then there was also, I talked to somebody today, and I asked him directly the same question you just asked me. What was it like? And he described it as a very emotional period. Not just after the story came out, but during the reporting of the story, because the Washington Post had to go to them to get some comments from them or to shine a light or ask them about allegations. And that led to internal investigations and a light being shined on some topics or some aspects of this that they didn't know about. So I think from some of those people, to be honest, there was a level of appreciativeness that there was a light shined on this.
Yeah, and there's certainly a level of appreciation, I think, for these women for just coming forward and speaking out about it. I think we all know how difficult that must be for them. Obviously, there were tons of women who didn't even want to state their names and stay anonymous. That just goes to show you how scary it can be to actually have to speak up in an environment where they didn't feel safe, nor did they feel comfortable. But that being said, I also just want to thank the women for doing it, because I can tell you just over the weekend, I spent a lot of time talking to other female reporters that I didn't realize have had their own stories. And I know we hear it all the time. And I think sometimes what happens is we become immune to this. It's like, okay, every woman has a story. Every woman has a story. Well, let's just slow down here and think about that. And what are we doing to make a change there? And having covered Ron Rivera before in Carolina and having had conversations with him numerous of times, I can tell you as a female NFL reporter, Ron has been a champion for women and for women getting an equal opportunity to do everything that the men are doing. And if there's any feeling of optimism for anyone in Washington, D.C. right now, it's the fact that their head coach will probably make it a priority, maybe after winning football games, to make sure that the environment is safe and comfortable for men, women, and whoever steps foot in that facility. And, you know, I know Dan Snyder did put out that statement there with Tanya Snyder included there. And I've spent tons of time around Tanya Snyder before. She's an advocate for breast cancer. She's a tremendous woman. I would love to see her do even more here and take that step forward and keep this conversation had in the NFL, because it's not just the Washington Redskins.
And Diana, I know you mentioned how great of a leader Ron Rivera is. Absolutely the case. But he won't be doing this alone. Is in other Washington news, Terry Bateman has been hired to spearhead the franchise's name change and branding efforts along with Dan Snyder. So, John, we'll go back to you. What was the reaction to this hire?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, there's, again, a couple of things, Field. First of all, it does take some of that burden off Rivera. And Diane is right. Rivera is now tasked to set the culture and the tone here, and he's had success doing that in the past, and that's what they're going to count on again. But I think as far as the Bateman hire goes, I think the general sentiment I got from people inside the building was they want legitimate change. I talked to some people who said they'd like to see a female hired in a position of power. They want to see more people in the human resources department. And I had one telling text exchange with somebody who works there, and I told this person that the general sentiment I'm getting is, again, just that. They don't just want cosmetic change. If that's all it is, they'll feel that it wasn't taken seriously and that the general unhappiness would continue. And the only reply I got back from this person was a thumbs up.
All right, John, well said there. And certainly we do hope for more change within the Washington organization to try to bring some better leadership going forward. Collectively, Brady and Gronkowski have connected for 90 touchdowns, including the playoffs. That's tied for the third most by any quarterback-receiver combo in NFL history. Only Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, plus our own Steve Young and Jerry Rice, have connected on more touchdowns. All right, let's bring it back, baby. It's time now for the Numberjack, as our resident lumberjack, Rob Ninkovich, takes a swing at some key numbers involving Gronk, Brady, and the Bucks entering the season. And Rob, you have this sort of interesting look going on right now.
Yeah, I'm in my mom's basement right now, so it's nice to be able to go and get a plaid shirt when you need to. So let's see how it goes.
There's no place like home, Robbie. And let's start with this one. I give it the first fact. You have the chance to back it or hack it. Gronk will lead the Bucks with at least 10 touchdown catches. Are you backing or hacking that?
I am going to back that. I feel like Gronk is going to be the biggest target for Tom Brady in the red zone. Look, you see the connection that they've had 90 touchdowns together, playoffs and regular season. They're going to be the second best duo to do this thing. I don't know if they're going to be number one. But guess what? I guarantee that Gronk is going to be the biggest target in the low red for Tom Brady. He needs a guy to go to. Throw it up. Tom's going to throw it up. Gronk's going to go get it. Catch it. Cannons firing. Explosive.
I don't know about that, Rob. I connect with you because as someone who lived with their parents up until last summer, I feel like we should connect there since you live at home right now. But the truth is this, Rob Gronkowski hasn't scored 10 plus touchdowns in over 5 years. It's been a long time, and Gronk isn't getting any younger. We know he's dealt with some injury. I know what you're going to say. You're going to go, well, he took that year off. He's feeling better. He's going to come back healthier. His body is rested. I think it's really hard to imagine that Gronk is going to have 10 touchdowns. That's a lot of touchdowns for a tight end, especially on an offense with all these weapons.
Well, if he gets 10 touchdowns, a lot of people playing fantasy football will be happy. All right, next one here, Robbie. Back in your lumberjack attire. Tom Brady hasn't thrown for at least 40 touchdowns since throwing 50 in 2007. But with Gronk, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin, Brady will throw for at least 40 in 2020. You got your hat on. Are you backing or hacking this one?
I need the hat. It's a little cold. I'm hacking this thing up. There's no way. There's no way. I mean, no offense to Tommy. He's going to have a good year. Maybe the mid, maybe 30 touchdowns. He hasn't reached 40 since he threw for 50 in 2007. So, I mean, I just don't think it's going to happen. It's going to be a tough thing for me to back that he's going to have over 40 touchdowns, even close. So I'm thinking maybe 30. 30, that's a good year, 30.
Yeah, I'm shocked, Rob, that you went with that, because I actually agree with you. The last time he threw for over 40, he was 30, and now he threw for 50. And so now he's over 40, and we think he's going to have 40 touchdown passes. That is not going to happen. But here's the thing. We've done this a million times on this show, but we're like, there's no way. And somehow, it always winds up coming back to haunt us. So, Rob, if he's able to do this, we're going to have to come back on the show and discuss this, but I don't see it happening.
Okay.
I'm kind of scared to go against the field on this one, man. I'm gonna be real with you. With all them weapons down there, I'm not one to shout, but I'm just playing the percentages, so I'm gonna say no. But man, he might light this thing up this year, Nico. He might light it up this year.
I'm making it a clean sweep. I'm hacking that one up as well. We got one more here, so going back to Robbie. The ESPN Football Power Index gives the Bucs an 8% chance to make the Super Bowl. That's the fifth best in the NFC. All right, Rob, are you backing or hacking the Bucs' chances to play in the Super Bowl, which, by the way, would be in Tampa?
I'm hacking this thing up. I'm hacking it up. Look, I know Tampa. I said Tampa is going to win the division. I think they are. But the NFC is just insanely tough. You got the 49ers, you got Seattle, who they're up and coming. I mean, they're not up and coming. Seattle's there. Seattle's a good team. So I just think that it's going to be tough for Tampa to go from a team that wasn't even in the playoffs to make it into the playoffs and win a Super Bowl or get into the Super Bowl. Win a division. The city's going to be going crazy. They'll put Tom on the shoulders and run him off the sidelines into the tunnel if they win the division. So no Super Bowls.
Oh, man. Nico, listen. I know the Saints are in the division. I know all the teams in the NFC, but for you not even think there's a chance of the Buccaneers to make it to the Super Bowl? Listen, the Buccaneers were 7-9 with a quarterback who threw, what, 30 interceptions last year? Had like 6 or 7 pick sixes? Now you bring in Tom Brady? With Rob Gronkowski, Mike Evans.
Diana, final word?
I don't think it's going to happen.
Look, when was the last time you did something different after doing the same thing for 20 years? I'm always going to go in this space with, you know, COVID-19 has made everything a little strange. He's going to be with a new head coach. He's got to build this chemistry with all these guys, and he just doesn't have that luxury. You know, there's going to be a learning curve here. And for him to be able to take this team all the way to the Super Bowl with all this change and all these difficult challenges, this is a very, very tall task. I don't even think they make the playoffs.
Diana, to your point, let's just start with making the playoffs. You know why? The Bucs have not made the playoffs since 2007, the second longest active drought in the NFL. Not quite as long as the Cleveland Browns. But no one asked. Sorry to go there. So we'll figure out what happens with the Bucs. Certainly lots of expectations this upcoming season in Tampa Bay. While it remains to be seen if any fans will be able to attend NFL games this year, several NFL teams have already issued guidelines for reduced capacity at their home games this season. The Chiefs and Packers haven't specified numbers, but said there will be a reduced number of fans. The Patriots said Gillette Stadium will be at 20% capacity if fans are allowed, and the Ravens will have fewer than 14,000 fans in Baltimore. New on NFL Live just moments ago, the Jets and Giants released a joint statement today that says, "Today, Governor Murphy announced that due to the ongoing public health crisis, his executive order limiting outdoor public gatherings will apply to events at MetLife Stadium until further noticed. Additionally, each team's 2020 training camps and practices will not be open to the public." As for the now Las Vegas Raiders and their brand spanking new Allegiant Stadium, we welcome in team reporter Paul Gutierrez, and owner Mark Davis has taken an all or nothing approach with his fans. Paul, what more can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Field, I'll tell you what, I spoke with Mark Davis last night, and there's a lot of frustration on his end to the point where, as you just mentioned, if there's no fans going to come in at all, then he's not going to go either. And a lot of that mantra comes from the fact that he's still kind of a maverick, like his dad was, in going against the grain when it comes to the NFL. The frustration, the anger a little bit about this is that after an offseason where there was equity all over the league, not a single team had an offseason program, really. Everything was virtual. The league then left it up to the teams and local governments as to whether or not or how many fans could come into games. Well, beyond that, he didn't like the fact that owners voted 31-1 to get off those first eight rows of seats and put advertising on top of that. His decision, his rationale for that, rather, is that he doesn't have 8,000 seats to give away because he sold out for the year in this new stadium. Beyond that, he wanted to present an idea as to take an idea from the NHL and put up that plexiglass to separate the players from the fans. He said that idea was shot down before it even went up to a vote. The way Mark Davis tells me, there's three scenarios for the league right now when it comes to the coronavirus and what's going on. He said they either continue with what's going on right now and see what happens with the teams showing up for training camp over the next week. They could either delay the season to November, play a 12-game season, which would mean getting rid of four interconference games, or they could cancel the whole thing together. But in the main topic that he kept trying to get across to me was this quote, where he said that no fan is more important than any other fan. Beyond that, he's not even sure that it's safe to play football at all right now.
Really interesting stuff there, Paul, and I appreciate you passing that along. Mark Davis, as you said, definitely not a man to go rogue every once in a while. As you mentioned, the one person with a vote against having those seats in the beginning of the stadiums blocked off. Thank you, Paul.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thank you.
All right, let's move along to our panel again. Let's get back to you, Rob, for some player perspective. In the event that there are no fans, or at least if there are limited fans in attendance at games, strategy-wise, who does that benefit?
I would say the away team's offense. And look, Tampa Bay goes to New Orleans to play week one, and you're telling me that a New Orleans Superdome with no fans in it wouldn't benefit Tampa Bay's offense to where they could go out there and run literally a third down hard count and get the defense to jump off sides. I can't remember the last time the Saints defensive line had to worry about a hard count in the Superdome. So for me, I would think that the away teams going to some of these really tough environments, places to play like Kansas City, the Superdome, any loud environment, offensively, now they don't have to go on a silent count. They don't have to go on signals. They can just tell each other, hey, run this, run that. This is what we're going to run. So it's going to be definitely an advantage for the visiting away team offense.
Yeah, you're literally wiping out home field advantage, you know, with this whole situation where fans are not going to be in attendance at these different stadiums. And think about it. It makes, as a former player, it makes my job a lot easier. Because during the week, we have to pump up crowd noise to simulate being on the road. And now with the fans not in attendance, that's one less thing as a player I have to worry about. The hardest part of this whole situation is going to be travel. That's it. But as far as concentration on snap count and all those type of things, this made my job a whole lot easier as far as being an offensive lineman or just a guy on offense.
Yeah, guys, when Paul Gutierrez did that report, or at least that story was posted on ESPN.com yesterday, I mean, of all the stories I've seen in relation to the NFL and COVID, this one really stood out. This is an owner who we know is excited about his new stadium opening in a brand new city in Las Vegas. There was so much hype about this and so much hype about this team that did a really good job in the offseason building and getting better. The fact that he is not comfortable on the day that some teams have rookies reporting where he doesn't even think perhaps we'll even have a season, I think is really, really telling. And as we know, those owners are all meeting right now as we speak. But the fact that he's got out in front of this to be very honest, which he doesn't seem very comfortable with any of this and has decided that he's not even going to attend the games, this just tells you the serious nature of COVID-19 and the effects it's going to have on the season.
The theme of the NFL right now, Diana, is uncertainty, as you just alluded to. Five players made the Madden 99 club this year, and they should come as no surprise. Patrick Mahomes, Michael Thomas, Christian McCaffrey, and the last two players to win Defensive Player of the Year, Aaron Donald and Stephon Gilmore. Mahomes was recently asked by Laura Rutledge about an arm strength battle between quarterback Josh Allen of the Bills, who happened to earn a 99 rating in that category, the only quarterback ahead of Mahomes' 97th arm strength rating.
Your arm strength, though, at 97, right behind Josh Allen at 99. What do you think about that?
Man, dude, I mean, obviously Josh has an extremely strong arm, but I've yet to see someone have a stronger arm than me. So maybe we can line up. I know we talked about maybe having a throw off, and then we can really prove who has the strongest arm.
Yeah, and you would definitely win, right?
I mean, I have ultimate belief in myself. I mean, he does have a strong arm. If I put it out there like 80, 85 yards, I mean, if he beats that, he just beats it.
All right, count me in for that. But, Diana, you've seen these quarterbacks up close. What stands out to you being around them?
Okay, so when you cover a game on Sunday and you're in the media, you usually head out to the field 30 minutes before kickoff. There's no reason to really be out there, but when I'm at Arrowhead, I love going like 3 hours before kickoff because Patrick Mahomes is usually the first one out on the field. And he usually just starts doing like these little warm-ups, but then all the rest of his teammates come out. And then he just starts launching them or launching the footballs across the field. And he competes with himself of how far he can throw it. So I'm going to double down on what Patrick just said. I've seen Josh Allen's arm, but he can't touch Patrick Mahomes.
Interesting, Rob, from a defensive perspective, how important is a big arm for a quarterback?
You can't throw it through us. I'm telling you, you got to have some touch. So I would think having a little Chad Pennington, a little, you know, a little touch on the ball, it's a big deal.
All right, Damon, thought you had a Brett Favre story. I heard he had a huge arm back in the day. No big deal. Most of my friends back home call me Uncle Rico for my arm strength. Again, not a big deal. You know me and my modesty. So long, everybody.